Golf Smarter number 239, recorded on July 13, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Great golf products you never hear about and why with the Golf Junkies.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for checking out the Golf Smarter podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, golf, and periodicals. Golf. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. We have a duo joining us today. C.B. Maxwell and Brad Cochran come from different parts of the golf world, but have teamed up to create a unique website called GolfJunkies.com. Their model is to provide exposure to small and mid-sized golf manufacturers who can't afford to advertise in traditional media. C.B. and Brad help them to take advantage of direct communication with golfers that the web provides. Golf Smarter podcast is really not much different than that. When I'm talking to groups or prospective clients about podcasting, I like to refer to this as communities of passion. But they're not just pimping their site, providing biased opinions about products. These guys are gut honest and give real reviews that speak to and benefit average golfers. That's what intrigued me. This was so much fun for us that we went for over an hour, but I'm going to break it up into two parts, with part two being a members-only episode the next time we publish. But you really need to listen all the way through today, because we have a special announcement that will affect you and pique your interest at the conclusion of this episode. Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Golf Junkies. CB, hello.
Hello, this is C.B. Maxwell in Sonora, California, calling in. How are you?
Now, are you, boy, what's your handle, C.B.? It sounds like we're on, you know, on the road here. And Brad, hello, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, I appreciate it.
Yeah, so I'm really curious how you guys got together, but first I'd like to get a little about your background each. C.B., why don't you tell us where you came from and how you got to the golf industry, or how long you've been part of the golf industry?
Well, I've been a journalist since about 1985, associated with the internet back then, held the very first, you know how you have online conferencing and chat rooms? We had a display in 1985 in Moscone Center where 12 people logged in using the most advanced software at the time, and blew people's mind that this type of technology was on its way, and here we are today where the whole world is wired. So I've been involved with the internet ever since then. Been involved with golf since about 1996, when I was a talk radio producer in Monterey, California. Started a radio show called The Golf Guys, and from there went on to be a national sales manager for a local manufacturer in Monterey, and then went back to my true love of multimedia, and that's where I met Brad at the golf show in Orlando, Florida, some years ago.
You've done that before, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty good. That was impressive. What do you mean you got the internet in 1985? There was no internet in 1985.
Actually, there was. One of the very first online communities was called The Well out of Berkeley, California. And make that Marin, California, and it was one of the very first, you know, little communities where you had forums and chats, and people would post all kinds of stuff, and it was the very, very beginning of it, and a lot of the leading thinkers out of the Silicon Valley I knew at the time, and, you know, we predicted all this.
So when you were doing your, as a golf journalist, was it covering golf events, or were you covering equipment? What element, what aspect of golf journalism were you focused on?
Well, that's when I produced a local radio show that actually got picked up by the Armed Forces Radio on 800 stations around the world, and it was called The Golf
Guys.
The Golf Guys.
Yeah, congratulations.
I almost called. And it was, you know, I was the host and the producer of the show, and it was a 3-hour show every Saturday. They got broadcast all over the place, and we covered everything under the sun until the guy that actually brought the show to me. He keeled over at a heart attack at age 53, owing a lot of money to people.
Yikes.
But again, then I started my own media company to help promote startups. I loved golf, and I loved golf innovation, and that's what drew me to Brad's first product that he brought to the table, which was a pinfire putter, which he and I had a rolling bet on how long he would be in the business, but he's lasted longer than anybody thought.
So then let's move over to you, Brad. Tell me about what your background is.
Mine's not as long as CB's, but...
He took 2 minutes.
I basically started golf at like 15 and got into it heavily there with the junior tours and trying to make the tour full time for a living. Then I figured out how hard it was and how bad I sucked at putting.
Oh, really?
So
was that your downfall?
That was actually my downfall. But what happened with that is that I couldn't putt with anything on the market. So then sitting in my garage one day, out of a piece of wood, and that's like basically how I started my first company, Pinfire Golf. Well, it was Bell Billet Golf, but then in a short time, probably 2 months after I was live with Bell Billet Golf, then that's when I had the offer to sell Bell Billet to Pinfire, and then I did, and then I was in the industry for what's the past 7 years and with Pinfire. And then after Pinfire, since it was so hard for startup companies to get noticed out there, I actually made GolfJunkies.com, and the whole reason that I did GolfJunkies.com was to give these little guys the opportunity to go out and promote themselves without paying on my website. So I let, like, the littler companies, I try to get the little companies to get a head start to get out there that they're not recognized. I do everything in my power to get them recognized.
Interesting. I'm sure that there's a lot of people. I know that there are listeners who have had an idea and said, you know what, I can make a living doing this. I can introduce a new golf product into the marketplace, and that's it. I can be part of golf for the rest of my life and just, you know, work until somebody buys my company. You've been through this. Does it work? Is it possible?
Of course it's possible,
but how likely is it? I mean, I'm sure there are, you know, hundreds of guys out there who come up with an idea or a product that they think they can, you know, succeed with, and no one ever recognizes it.
Well, if you believe in your idea enough to put the effort in to make it work, I mean, anyone can make anything work. You just have to have the motivation to make it work, and I had the motivation to make it work. I play golf every single day, and to promote my product wasn't very hard because I'm a halfway decent player, so when people would see me putting with what I designed, they would get interested, and then that's how it kind of went, because I didn't even think anyone was going to putt with this thing. And then the more and more people used it, they wanted to buy it. So then I got my friends involved, and we came up with, like, I don't know, about 100 putters total, and we sold out of those entire 100 putters in 2 months' time,
wow,
which we thought was unbelievable. Because we just sell them to local shops. I mean, we would just go to the golf course and ask them if we could do a demo day. They said, sure, do a demo day. And then we'd do demo days and we'd sell them. And the key behind back then is what I did, which wasn't really around in the industry. Aluminum putters weren't even that big back then. But I would anodize them in every single color you could possibly imagine, just so I can catch people's eyes. So if they were like the fan of, like Ricky Fowler, say, for instance, for Oklahoma, we'd make an orange putter. We'd just anodize it orange, and we would keep them raw, so when someone wanted more or wanted a different color, we could just go down to the anodized shop and do it. And that's kind of how I got noticed. That's how I actually got the company was recognized by the owner, the people that bought it from me in the first place, was because my buddy was a starter at a golf course, and he would sit at that little booth where he lets people go out on the first tee, and he'd have 5 putters of mine lined up, all crazy colors. So the one guy came up, and he bought a blue one, or no, he bought a red one for himself, and he bought a blue one for his brother back east, sent it back to his brother. I get a phone call a week later saying, is your company for sale? And I'm like, sure, anything's for sale. So he gave this offer that, I mean, I don't want to say, but it's just too good to be true. So then that's basically how it all came about. I mean, just from the colors of what I was doing back then, which no one had really seen, that's how my company got started. So to go back on your point, I mean, if you have, you put all your ideas and your motivation, I mean, anyone can do it. Yeah. Now, can you succeed with the golf industry? That's tougher, but...
Oh, I thought that was my question. Yeah, anybody can do anything if you have not only the idea and the motivation, but you also need the support system at home to do that. But, yeah, can you succeed? Those, I guess that's a different question altogether. Can you succeed in this industry?
Well, to put it in perspective, you know, I went to the show, the PGA show in Orlando, which everybody knows is a big, huge show, and it's where people introduce new products. And I'd say in any given year, what do you think, Brad? 30, 40 new putter designs show up at the show?
At least.
Yeah. So, and of those 30 or 40 new putter companies, that was the rolling bet I had with Brad, is would he be there 2 years later? And miraculously, he was. But I'd say the vast majority, you know, out of those 40 companies, maybe you'll see one or two survive the cut, so to speak. And I talk with, you know, people that have golf ideas, oh, you know, dozen a year or so. And my first question to them is, can you afford to lose all the money you have invested and not lose your house or your wife?
Really? I mean, that's how you get this started. That's what you have to kind of scare them into this, huh?
Well, that's my threshold, because I know that out of 9 out of 10 are not going to succeed because they're not going to do what Brad does, and that is he immerses himself in the project and he knows his way around the industry. You get all these newcomers who come along. They may have a great idea. It may even be just a kind of a weird idea. I'll give you a good example. There was a guy I met at the Las Vegas show. The product's called Windage. It's a golf ball size
David Healy
container. Yeah, David Healy. He sold 60,000 units of that thing, and it just sprays white powder into the air until the USGA came on board and said, no, you can't use that on a golf course, and his sales just plummeted. Well, being the smart entrepreneur that he is, he designed it for hunters, and he has some sort of like deer scent in there, and he now sprays it up and it draws it. So he's selling him bread a boatload to the hunting industry. But the point is that you've got to be, I don't want people mortgaging their houses to get into the golf business. There's an old expression that Brad is fairly familiar with, is how do you make $1 million in golf? And the answer is you start with $10 million. So.
Yeah, I've heard that said about owning sports teams in the 80s when I was working with baseball, and they said, how do you become a millionaire? Start out as a multimillionaire and buy a baseball team.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's so interesting because that you say, you bring up David Healy. I've not been to the Orlando show, but I have been to Las Vegas a couple of times. And in some ways, it made me sad because there were people there that were, you know, ready to throw away their career as an insurance salesman because they have a new tee. And they're willing to bank their life on this new tee, like, you know, it's going to create that much demand. And in the first year that I went through the show, David Healy was there with Windage, and I thought it was a brilliant idea. I loved Windage, and he, you know, he was fighting with the USGA. And then went on he was on the Golf Channel on their show For Inventors Only, and they liked it but blew him out of the water immediately because the first question they asked was, is it legal? Well, no, we're working on that. Well, is it legal? Well, not right now, but is it legal? And so they just got bumped off the show. But I know that David Healy has had lawsuits against the USGA. Their whole goal was to get it in the hands of caddies. They just wanted to get it in the hands of caddies on the tour. And the times that they spoke to caddies about Windage, caddies thought it was a great idea, and would ask, what's the problem with this? Why isn't it working? And they said, well, the USGA says that it's not legal. And caddies go, well, why do you think we smoke cigarettes on the course? Why do you think that we smoke cigars to check the wind? Why is this any different? And he's like, oh, my God, you're right.
Now they're going to ban cigars.
Yeah, right. Some golf courses will not ban cigars, but they will ban cell phones. And so anyway, he's won, and he's moving forward with it. I've been speaking with David recently, and they are moving forward. And we have given away a bunch of the Windage in the past with the Golf Smarter logo on it, Smarter logo. So, yeah, it's just interesting to see how many people try to mortgage their lives when they do this kind of stuff.
Well, and that's why I say I don't recommend it, because even if I've seen great products go by the wayside just because they didn't have the sustainability on the capital. In fact, I just got off the phone with another marketing consultant with a new product that they're trying to get out there. I won't mention this name because they're not a client yet, but they spent a boatload on some infomercials on the Golf Channel, did not make their return on investment, and they've had to suspend the Golf Channel campaign. So that's one of the reasons I really enjoy working with Brad, is that he's young enough, smart enough, and you know, innovative enough to realize that the shift is on to the Internet. We can take the same amount of dollars that someone would spend on print, television, and radio, and devote it to the Internet and reach, you know, I don't even know what the exponential number is, but it's hundreds of times of more people. And the fact is, people, at this point in the game, I'd think just about any product that a person's going to buy, they're going to research it on the Internet. Don't you think so?
Oh, absolutely. And what's also interesting about that is you can be far more directed. You can really focus in on and know the results that you're getting when you're dealing with the Internet versus radio, TV, or print. You're just, you know, it's a push versus pull, right? With radio, TV, and print, you're just pushing the content out there and hoping the right people hear it at the exact right moment. But when you're doing a podcast or you're on the Internet, the people who want that information are seeking it out. They're pulling it in.
Yep, exactly. I mean, you know, a magazine sits on the table 90% of the time. Radio, you've got your demographic, but it doesn't mean that you're going to reach your target audience. Television, the same is true. You have anywhere from 15-year-old to 80-year-olds watching the same program and don't have the same need. So, and like you say, the Internet, people are going looking for specific products in specific niches, and that's where you can meet them.
Absolutely. And speaking of directing it towards the Internet, I have to break for a commercial here, because this episode of Golf Smarter is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature that includes fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. And for Golf Smarter listeners, if you go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter, you can get a free audiobook of your choice. And that means that of the 75,000 titles, lots of titles in golf, you can get a free audiobook. And if you're a podcast listener, you're used to this kind of content and listening to this content. So give yourself a chance to try their service. One audiobook that you might want to consider, and I think it's appropriate in this conversation, that we talk about John Daly's book, Golf My Own Damn Way, which is an audiobook. It's Golf My Own Damn Way, A Real Guy's Guide to Chopping 10 Strokes Off Your Score, by John Daly and Glenn Wagoner, and Glenn actually narrates the book. So you should check that one out, or check whatever else you'd like. But to do so and get a free audiobook of your choice, please help them by helping us, and help us by helping them. audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. AUDIBLE podcast.com/golfsmarter. And we thank them very much for their support of the Golf Smarter podcast. Hey, Brad, I'm curious to ask you about how you got into putter design. I mean, what was your background other than just playing golf? What made you believe that you can design a putter that will actually work?
That's a hard question, because I'm not the typical designer.
Absolutely.
I take, like all these other guys that have gone to school and have done all the stuff that they've done, learning CAD, learning the CNC, learning all that kind of stuff, that just wasn't my thing. When I design a putter, I go off of the looks first and what can help, like, because you got to like the thing that you're putting with. So I'll go off looks, and then after I'm done with that process, then I'll just go into the overall workability of the putter to make the MOI larger, to do anything of that sort. But I don't have any background in specific design at all. And I didn't when I first went into it.
So
as I told you, I mean, I did it out of a piece of wood.
Huh.
So I did it so far old school of my time, but that's all I had available to me. And then I just met my friend that had a CNC shop, and then we put our minds together and we came up with them.
Sweet.
But that's what I do.
Look, I got to interject. Brad's designs actually are probably the most innovative out there. I mean, you look at some of the other crazy designs, but his are very visually pleasing. They're made of aluminum. They have a very crisp feel. The ones I've used have been anodized in black, anodized in gold, anodized in gray. They're very attuned to alignment, very intuitive on alignment. Like one of them, I think it's J1, he's got two slots that run the length of the mallet putter that you can see the grass below the ball or behind the ball, and just line those slots up, putt, bingo. He's got a really interesting face on the milling on the face. It just absolutely grabs the ball, gets it rolling right away. Great feedback and feel. So, I mean, some of his designs are just really, really out there.
And I'm curious, how many iterations of your design did you have to go through until you went, aha, I got it?
One.
Really?
Yeah, my very first prototype out of a piece of wood, we took my exact measurements off my piece of wood and we put them on aluminum. Because we figured it out that, okay, out of my design, when we put it to aluminum, it was going to weigh out at 342 grams. And 342 grams is pretty much the standard for every putter. So it was a one-step process. Everything with me and all of my designs, I've never designed a putter and then got it back from the prototype stage and had to revamp it in any way.
Wow.
Never one time in my entire lifetime.
That's amazing.
I just take everything on that piece of wood that I did and transferred it over, and it just worked out perfectly. Now, on my other designs that I came out with later, I mean, of course, I didn't have to no longer work with wood because I had the money to actually do things the right way. So then all that I would do is just draw down on a piece of paper and then write my measurements down of what I wanted and gave it to my guy at the CNC shop, and he would come up, and then I'd say, that's perfect. Let's do a run of them. And it's flowed like that the entire time.
So that enhances your credibility on looking at other new products and seeing what's out there and kind of having a sense. I guess you have this intuitive sense of going, you know what, that will work. Or you just, whatever comes along, you fall in love with it, like me.
Well, I think, there's a lot of
things out there that, like, when I look at them, they're not visually appealing to me, but, I mean, when I use them for a little bit, they become visually appealing, because you got to get used to any new product you pick up. And then when you see the advantages of some things out there, I mean, it makes it better. I mean, if you're hitting things close or you're making putts, even if you didn't like the look of it before, all of a sudden you love the look of it. It's just weird how the mind works that way, but that's how it goes.
Yeah, and it's amazing to me how people can just take a club off the shelf, go take some swings with it into a net and decide, yeah, this is the one that's right for me. It's probably based more on visual than anything than actual performance.
It is visual. That's why it's kind of strange to me. Go ahead, forget it.
Here's the truth about golf equipment. I don't
like to badmouth other companies, but it's just strange to me that people will come out with product and put their life on the line with their product inferior in looks or any, not even the workability of the product. It's just the overall look of the product. If you come up with something and it's horrible to look at, I mean, how do you even go? That's why I'm lost for words, because I don't even know how people do that.
Yeah, well, and you're not mentioning any names, and we appreciate that. But it's true. There's people who when you say to them, "Well, I just don't like the look of it," they can justify it. They can come up with reasons why that doesn't matter. But in their mind, that's fine. But for the rest of the marketplace, it just doesn't cut it.
Well, and the marketplace is all programmed by brand. I mean, I kind of am fond of the saying that about 80% of golf consumers are brand-oriented. In other words, they want to be a Nike guy. They want to be a Titleist guy. Oh, and by the way, breaking news, Tiger is using a Nike putter at the British Open. He announced today in his press conference.
Huh.
He's not using his Scotty for the first time. So,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's breaking news on the Tiger front.
Well, and what's great about a podcast is people are going to listen to this in a week and a half, going, "Well, I knew that."
Yeah, you heard it here first.
Yeah. Well, no, I heard it on the network as I was watching. Yeah. Well, the beauty of podcasting, it's time shifted. But I'm sorry.
Yeah, but here's the other thing about equipment that's interesting is that when people get a new club or a new putter or a new wedge or a new hybrid, the first few times out when they use it, their focus is on really trying to make a good swing because they want the new product to work. And as a result, the very first few times out, the product works better than what their old product has because they don't have the same level of focus using their older equipment. As soon as they've had it in their bag 3, 4, 5, 6 rounds, they're going to be right back to where they were with whatever they were using before.
Yeah.
Now, in the case that, which leads me to Blackmagic, Brad, because you had a chance to actually play with the Blackmagic hybrid wedge, and you were kind of surprised.
Yeah, and actually, I was going to ask you if there's anything you're excited about right now, Brad. Any products?
Actually, I mean, CB brought it up with the Blackmagic wedge, and then like I said before, it's the visual aspect of the Blackmagic wedge isn't like anything that you've seen really out there before. But it's like the hybrids. When I first picked up a hybrid, I mean, I was flabbergasted how anybody can put it in their hand. But now it's in like 90% of everyone's bag.
Yeah.
And that goes with the thing. I mean, because it helps you. You can't hit a 2-iron out of the rough like you can hit a hybrid out of the rough.
Exactly.
And it goes the same way with the Blackmagic wedge. I mean, everyone is so stuck on the top 3 or 4 wedge companies out there that they think that's the right thing to do, and they don't give really other wedges chances. They just say, it's a Cleveland, it's a Vokey, it's going to work. And it's the most important aspect of your game next to putting is your short game, the wedges. Now, these wedges, it's the weird thing. It's the one product that I'm excited about because of how easy it is to hit. And for the average player, if they gave it a chance, they would see how easy it is to hit. And they might switch from, like, Vokeys because it's just, like I said, it's going from the hybrids and the 2-iron, and now you're going from the Cleveland and Vokeys, go over to the Blackmagic. I mean, you'll see the benefits in the product. It's an amazing product. It's a good product.
Well, I've seen your video, and I will post it on our Facebook page for the Golf Smarter group on Facebook, and I'll also put it on our blog. But you've got a video of you playing with this Blackmagic wedge that I want, you know, I mean, I've talked to you a couple times, so I know that you don't have a budget to create a video that is, you know, with computer graphics. This video looks like it's fake, but it's the real deal, isn't it?
Yeah, but in any of my videos, I don't do takes. If I mess up on talking, I mess up on talking. I can care less. I give the product. If the product works, you're going to see that the product works. If the product doesn't work, it's not going to work on my reviews. But, I mean, the thing, I've gotten a lot of emails about that, and people say, well, Brad, you're plus handicapped golfer, so you can hit a Coke can on the bottom. But that doesn't even make the whole difference. It's just when you feel the feel off of the face of the wedge and how it pops, you can see in my video that I'm kind of flabbergasted by how it works.
Well, tell us what happened in the video. You know, if they don't get a chance to see it, we're listening to this now. Explain what you did with the Blackmagic wedge in the video and your results.
Oh, let me tell you, because I thought Brad had somebody behind him throwing the ball up. I mean, he's got the camera in a still shot, okay? There's no zoom, there's no in or out, there's no music.
It's like he just set it on a tripod and just turned it on and walked over and started talking.
This is in real time. He's in the bunker. He just puts a little nice smooth swing on it. Bingo. 3 feet to the pin. He goes out and throws it deep in the rough, steps on the ball, punches it out of the rough. Boom. 3 feet to the pin. I'm going, this is impossible. I mean, think about it. There are so many. You take your conventional wedge. Every single one of them has a different level of bounce, depending on the turf you're playing, depending on the level of play you're playing, the coarseness of the sand you're playing. There's virtually an unlimited variation of your angle of attack of the bounces on these various brands of wedges. And for most people, they don't have a clue of how to use them properly. And even if they did, they don't have the skill sets necessary to do it. Even if they knew what they were supposed to do, they couldn't do it. With the Blackmagic, it's just got that nice big rounded bottom sole. Bingo. if you get the club face on the ball, it's going to go as far as it goes based on how hard you hit it. And you don't have to do anything special. Like, you watch these professionals on the weekends. I mean, these guys can cut a shot out of the rough with a wedge like a cue ball on a pool table and make it go any which way that they want. They can make it roll out. They can make it stop and back up. I mean, they're really, really good at it. You don't have to be that good at it. Can you hit the lob wedge? Did you have the lob wedge there with you, Brad?
I didn't have the lob wedge. What you got, what everyone saw in the video was actually a 56. If I would have had a lob wedge, it would have been easier.
So the Black Magic wedge has different lofts on it? It just kind of looks like a hybrid. Is that what we're saying, but it's a wedge?
Yeah, it looks like a hybrid. I mean, they even do 48. They go 48, 52, 56, and 60. So they do the whole line of wedges for everyone.
Interesting.
And the other part of it is that the hosel is coming in behind the face, much like the F2 face forward wedge, you know, clubs. So that hosel's coming in behind the face, and you can't shank it off of the heel of the thing. It's all face. And you don't have to get fancy with it or open it up or do anything. You just square up to the ball, swing, bingo. And they're consistent on the distance, aren't they, Brad?
Very consistent on the difference. The best way to put it with that wedge is it's the mallet of putters. It's exactly the same thing. Like, a mallet's so much easier to line up. The mallet's so much, it's a bigger sweet spot. I mean, you get more putts to the hole. You make more putts with a mallet over a blade. It's just people have a hard time switching from a blade.
Yeah.
It's like when I did, it wasn't even supposed to be in the shot, but I didn't have anybody there to cut it. So when you do one-handed, try a one-handed shot with a normal one, and then try a one-handed shot with the Black Magic, and you'll see the pop off the face to get it to the distance that you want it to go, and it's no extra effort needed.
Well, also, I was thinking of the transition that going into, and I know that there are so many people who just, once they started using a hybrid, they dumped their 3-iron, their 4-iron, and even some have dumped their 5-iron just because of how much more confidence you have when you hit a hybrid, how well it comes out of the tall grass, how, you know, great it feels when you make contact. I just, the thought of doing that with a wedge out of the sand, I can see how that would be very comforting.
It'll help so many people's games. That's why I try to get the word out about those guys. Because it's one product that's not, it's definitely not a gimmicky product.
Wow.
I mean, it actually works. And you're going to have the people, like I said, I think in video, I think I said, you're going to have those guys that say, I don't need a hybrid, I want a 2-iron. You're going to always get those types of guys that say, I'm better than that and I don't need help. But if you're just an average golfer, say from a 5 handicap to a 20 handicap, why in the world would you want to have something in your bag that's hard to hit versus something that's going to help improve your game?
Yeah.
That's where golfers don't make any sense. You want to look good. Well, who cares about looking good? You'll look good when you shoot a lower score after your round.
Yeah, exactly. That's what makes you look good, is when you make the shot.
Yeah.
That looks good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're buying a new driver. I mean, these are not expensive clubs, are they?
No. They're like $90, $99, something like that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, you know, let's put it right out there that we talked about this ahead of time. We knew we were going to get into talking about the Black Magic Wedge. That's part of how I found you guys and you found me. But your video just made me like, okay, I need to talk to you about this. Once I saw the video of you hitting out of the bunker and stepping on the ball in the bunker and stepping it in the rough, I really wanted to see it. And actually, we are now going to be able to give away a Black Magic Wedge. Is that right?
Yeah. We're going to give one away to your members.
Okay. So the listener who wins this will even have a choice of which degree of loft they can, and whether they're right or left-handed. They can select which wedge they want, correct?
Yeah, you can pick anything from the 48 to the 60.
Awesome. All right. That's the
weird part about Black Magic is if you have that 56, I mean, you saw my video where you can still work it like a 60.
Mm.
So I'm waiting for the 60 to do a review on just to see how much better that is. But the 56 kind of performs like it. But it still goes, to me, like the designer of that club told me that some people were hovering right around the yardage that they would hit with a normal sand wedge. But with me with that club, I can hit a 56 degree 120 yards. I hit a 56 degree 120 yards with my normal 56, but that's probably like the math behind it and the shots to the. I don't even know what it is. I just like the product.
Right. All right, so let's let everybody get in on this. If you would like to win a Blackmagic wedge, please, here's all you have to do. Go to golfsmarter.com and scroll over to the button that says contest. Click on that, fill out all the information, put in the little code there that allows you to get through it so we can weed out the spam type of thing. Enter as many times you'd like, but we're going to weed those out, and it'll be one entry per person unless you are a Golf Smarter member. Golf Smarter members are automatically entered into our drawing. And if they'd like to increase their chances of winning, they can enter again, and their name will be in the drawing twice. We will allow this to, you 4 weeks to enter for this. So the deadline for entry is August 13th, 2010. Make sure that you enter before August 13th, 2010 at golfsmarter.com, and we'll announce the winner on the next episode, which will be on August 17th. August 13th is a Friday that week, and we'll announce the winner on August 17th. And we thank the folks at Blackmagic Wedges for offering one to give away. Also, when you're on that contest page, there's going to be a banner ad at the top of the page for Blackmagic Wedge. So click on that and go to their website, and you can learn more about them as well. And again, they're not expensive. If you just, yeah, you'd like to win one, but if you also want to buy one, and then you'll have one because, you know, it's worth buying. And then you can, when you get your free one, then you get like a twofer. You get two for the price of one, and you can have different lofts, right? So you can pick two different ones. So win one, buy one, and win one, whatever you want. But we're going to announce a winner on August 17th. Guys, listen, can you come back for another episode next week? Because I want to talk more about what you do on golfjunkies.com.
Yeah, that doesn't mean we're going away, Brad. That's just setting up the next segment. On the line.
So here's what we're going to do. I'm going on vacation. I need another episode, and I would love it if you guys would spend some more time with me on the phone, and we'll cut this into two episodes, and we'll talk more about golfjunkies.com. So can you hang out a little bit longer, and we'll record a second episode here? Would that be okay?
Yeah, we got some great stories for you.
Oh, awesome. All right. Well, and we got great stories for our listeners as well. And next week's episode will be a Golf Smarter for Members Only episode. And if you want to hear that entire conversation, please join Golf Smarter for Members Only and increase your chances of winning a Blackmagic wedge. Guys, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
Okay, so here's the deal. I'm heading to the East Coast for my summer vacation and want very much to keep my Ironman status intact. If all works well, then I will access this computer that I'm working from right now from the road and publish next week's show on time. If not, then it will be the first week in over 4.5 years that Golf Smarter will not be published on time. I am too motivated to not let that streak die. So at the very least, tune into next week to see what happens if I was able to make this thing work. The next episode is a members-only show, and Brad, CB, and I get into some really interesting behind-the-scenes information on how successful golf products are, what impact tour players have on their success, and various tests that the golf junkies perform, and why they do it that way, and why they'll never do it again. Now, I just wanted to remind you of the deals that we have on the Dixon golf balls in our Golfers Mart. If you remember back in December of 2009, we had a conversation with Sean the Beast Pfister. He was the 6-time long drive champion. The Dixon Wind ball, the new one on their product line, is his first ball of choice when he's playing 18 holes. Now, he'd love to use them for the long drive competition, but the guys who run the competitions, they're the ones who choose which ball they play. But Sean prefers to play the Dixon balls when he's out playing golf. I recently played the new Dixon Wind balls and couldn't believe how much farther I was driving with them. My first drive went 290 yards, and generally I'm in the 240 range, so that was nuts. Anyway, Dixon is a great example of a small manufacturer who has a great product and is trying to compete with their competitors' big ad budgets. But here's the catch. As great as they play, The Dixon balls are the world's first green golf balls on the market, not color. I mean, they're eco-friendly. Do you realize that more than 300 million golf balls are lost each year? And that's why the golf manufacturers make more money on balls than on clubs. Well, those 300 million golf balls, that's a ton of waste. And with the harsh metals used in other golf balls, that contributes to a lot of damage to the plants and fish that are surviving around golf courses. There's no need to contribute to that. Use the Dixon balls. Losing balls are part of the game. Of course, we admit that. So use a ball that is also 100% environmentally friendly. Improve your game, improve the world. Play Dixon Earth or Dixon Wind Balls. Now, the new Dixon Wind Ball is the first 100% extreme distance eco-friendly ball, and the Dixon Earth Ball, which we've talked about for a long time, is the first eco-friendly tournament quality ball, and soon we'll get to know more about the latest release, the Dixon Fireball. The reason I bring this up is because we probably have the best deals on Dixon balls anywhere in our Golfers Mart. If you purchase 3 boxes of Dixon Earth Balls, you'll get the 4th box for free. If you're a Golf Smarter member, you can purchase 2 boxes and get the 3rd box for free. Almost pays for your membership right there. All the balls will also have the Golf Smarter logo. That you can't get anywhere else. So when I get back from vacation, we'll also have similar deals on the Dixon Wind Balls because they're just putting their pricing together now. Now, if you'd like to get a box of the Dixon Wind Balls, we're changing. We've been using the Dixon Earth Balls, but now we're going to let you get the Dixon Wind Balls. Join Golf Smarter for members only. Our 6-month membership is only $39, and for an additional $10, you'll receive a box of the Dixon Wind Extreme Distance Balls with the Golf Smarter logo on each ball. That's a $25 value for only an additional $10. A great way to try out the ball and to become a member. For more information about the ball and to join, please go to golfsmarter.com. Next week, hopefully, if it all works, part 2 of our conversation with the Golf Junkies, C.B. Maxwell and Brad Cochran. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button, and don't forget to click on the contest button to enter and win a Black Magic Wedge at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.